When we think about focus, and people talk about being focused, and they forget that that takes energy. It takes mental, physical, emotional energy to really be present with your team, to be focused with them. It takes energy to be focused on a complex task. And you can only focus for so long before that energy starts being drained away, and how it's important to be proactive in renewing yourself so you can be present in the next moment. And the way I talk about that from the world of honeybees is that even though as hardworking as honeybees are, they take about 40 naps per day.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number two from Dominic Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. And today on the Highlight Reel Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, my friends, courtesy of one of the best websites going strong on planet Earth today, known as Podmatch.com, the wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts, and if they're cool, they're freaking in, and today's guest is cooler than two cucumbers. Let me tell you a bit about him, because today's wonderful best-selling author is a father, a husband, as well as one of those internationally recognized keynote speakers, coach, trainers, and beekeepers. So let's give it up for the man you got to keep up with, but he's going to make it easy for you, the one, the only Jones Laughlin. How you doing today, Jones?
Fantastic, Dom, and I'm already trying to keep up with you with your energy level. So I may be the one keeping up with you. It's not about keeping up with the Joneses today. Wow.
Yeah, I'm sure folks run that joke into the ground every time they hear your first name.
That's okay. As long as they remember it, that's all I care about.
That's a good point, actually. You're right. Well, speaking of keeping up with the Joneses, you're probably the first one I actually can think of, at least in recent history, that's actually a beekeeper, my man. So what led you to becoming a beekeeper? Think along with one of your daughters too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. My daughter and I got into beekeeping about 6 years ago. Someone gave us a hive of bees, and we were miserable failures that first season. We lost the whole hive by the end of the season. We weren't doing good. And so we were just fascinated by them and continued that journey. And we have so enjoyed learning from them, watching them. I mean, they just are incredibly organized. They just get so much stuff done in a season. I mean, you can go out there and take a lid off the hive today and then go look at it again in a week. You're like, how'd you get so much done? But they're just incredible creatures.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about indeed. So a pick six years ago, starting bees. You love to see it. You love to see it indeed. So my goodness, so was that curiosity or was it just, help some bees out since the chemtrails are killing them out here in the U.S. of A.
Yeah. No, it was definitely a curiosity. You nailed it. Just because they're so different. And it just seems counterintuitive to put on a suit and get up next to all these, venomous insects who could sting you. But then once you're there and you're kind of looking down, you're kind of watching them, you're going, wait a minute. You're not killer bees. You're not attacking me. And the reason is because they're just so darn focused on what they want to get done that they don't care that this giant has just ripped the lid off of their house and is looking at them, because they're like, hey, we ain't got time for we don't have time for these distractions. We got to get work done.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, that's definitely powerful. level of focus. So my goodness, so that level of focus looks like you were able to apply to your whole career, because started off as a educator, then able to parlay that into basically what you're doing now as a speaker and trainer, right?
Correct. I was a teacher for a few years, then went into speaking and training. And yeah, I do a lot of the same things I've been doing for 30 years. My big break came, Dom, in 2000 when somebody handed me a book called Who Moved My Cheese? And some of your listeners who are 35 and under are going, what? yes, there was a book called Who Moved My Cheese? And it was just a great message about how to look at change. And it forever changed my perspective. And I said, you know, I would love to teach and train people using models like that, because it helps people to figure out where they are and what they can do to, in your words, go north to head toward greater success.
Greater success indeed. Greater success indeed. And you were licensed to teach the content at the time too, right?
It was fascinating. I was so excited when somebody handed me the book that after I finished reading it, there was a section in the back where it says, hey, if you'd like some training material. So I called the company and they said, well, we actually have this program where you can become a franchisee of the message and share it with others. And so I said, oh, yeah, sign me up. So I went to that, got licensed to deliver the content. And after about a year, the company stopped doing it as far as licensing people outside the company, because they were finding that the quality wasn't the same. You know, people wanted to say, oh, I do Who Moved My Cheese, and they weren't doing a good job with it. So they closed that, but they had seen the success I had. And so they asked me to come on board as a trainer for the company. And so that was an incredible break for me, Dom, because up until that time, a lot of my work was youth and education association. But for the first time, I really got to go into a lot of corporate environments and see how to deliver effective training, and to realize I didn't have to have all the answers. What I had to do was to provide a framework for people to go, huh, all right, where am I? And yep, okay, here's what I can do to move forward. And so that was just really a break point in my career where I said, I can do this thing differently than I've been doing it.
Oh, nice. As I'm talking about, indeed. So that's what makes sense. No one had ever heard anything about like a Who Moved My Cheese trainer, because some folks took the content and weren't doing what they needed to do with it properly. How it all makes sense, because you're also the first one that I've actually heard actually got to train with the content. I'm like, oh wow, that was going on back in 2000. Okay.
yeah, long time. Back when I had a full head of hair, Dom. Of course, I know we're doing audio only, but they can go look me up. I don't have a full head of hair now.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good. Hey, Michael Jordan was bald. Ain't nothing wrong with being bald. Shoot.
You got it. You got it.
That's right, D. That's right, D. And the good news is that it wasn't just you sticking with teaching someone else's content. You're able to create your own after a while. So it helped you to get the confidence to do that.
Hey, I'll go back to Who Moved My Cheese, Dom, in that It helped me to see I didn't have to be a subject matter expert on leadership or time management. I just had to have a compelling way to get them to think about how effective, you know, their leadership was, their time management was. And so once I had that confidence, then I began to say, okay, how could I apply this to other things? And that led to my book, Juggling Elephants, which is how to manage your work and life like it's a circus. And that came out of a discussion that my friend Todd Musig and I were having about just being so busy in life and not getting the right things done. And I'll never forget, Todd said, you know, what am I supposed to do? Run around like my life's some kind of circus? I'm like, okay. What would your life look like if you managed it like a circus? And we had that, you know, wasn't on a napkin, but it was on 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. We started drawing some things out, and we started thinking about what would you be if you're the ringmaster? What does that look like? And what rings do you have in your life? And so once we developed it, we, you know, started following those principles ourselves and saw, hey, there's value here, which eventually led to that book. So in answer to your question, what gave me the confidence was seeing that the stories like that, the metaphors, parables, they have value. And if they're done well, it resonates with people and they will connect with the message and want to share it with others.
Yeah, so talking about indeed, because they will share if it's freaking good. That's right, indeed. That's what I'm talking about. Indeed. So, my goodness, man. So, where do you think your longevity comes from with all this energy you got, man? Because, like, the speaking training business is not an easy business, man. And you've been doing it for a good while, man. So, what helps you to really stay in business and stay at this high energy level?
Sure. And thanks for that, Dom. It's first of all, I think for me is the opportunity to have impact on folks in a positive way. I mean, let me answer your question by a story. A few years ago, I was at a hotel conference and someone walked up to me and they had a copy of Juggling Elephants in their hand and they just walked up in front of me. Now imagine there's probably 1,000 people in the room. They're walking up toward the front of the stage. I'm walking away and he held up the book and he said, "Your book saved my marriage."
Wow.
And in that moment, I went, "Oh, wow." And so it's moments like that that give me energy and excitement about what I do. Because if something I say, something I share, something I write, if it helps people, as I say, make better choices with their time, to invest more in time with their spouse, significant other, kids, if it helps them to get the clarity and confidence that they can do their job better, that they will stretch outside their comfort zone, then that's what gives me energy, is knowing that I've been a small part in helping them do that. So clearly, that's where, what drives me.
There you go. That's right indeed. It ain't Hondas or Toyotas either. That's what drives them. You love to see Yes, indeed. Because that's probably one of the highest compliments you can get, man. It's like, sure, like your concerts help us save someone's marriage. Like, yes, let's save those, a lot of
Yeah,
those.
well, because here's the thing, Dom, and you know this because you've had so many guests on your show and they've talked about it. The fuel for our professional success is in our personal wellness and relationships. And unfortunately, so many people forget that when they start, having so much to get done at work, or they start thinking about all the things they want to accomplish at work. They forget to nourish and invest in the very things that give them the energy to do the stuff they want to do at work. And I like reminding people of that, that, hey, you need to be proactively investing or intentionally investing in, your own wellness, in your family, because that's what's going to propel you to have the confidence and the energy to deliver your best work, is because of those things that you're doing with family and for yourself.
For yourself, family, indeed, you'll love to see it. You'll love to see it. Cause yeah, it's so freaking true. Because, like, yep, things are right at home, things get right everywhere else, usually.
Ha ha! There you go. Put that out on X. What a great quote. Yes.
Yes, sir, indeed. Yes, sir, indeed. Okay, as when things go right, sometimes things may feel like they're going wrong. So, has there been a major setback in business or life that actually was a setup for success for you?
That's a great question, Dom. And I've had several bumps in the road, I guess, over the years. Of course, when we had well, I'll go back to early in my career. After one of my best years so far in business, I had my worst year. And that's not uncommon. Research says that for small businesses, that's usually your worst years after your best one, because you kind of go, "Ah, I've arrived." And so
Right.
I hadn't, what's that old phrase? When you're green, you grow, and when you're ripe, you rot. And so I had kind of gotten a little ripe and thinking, "Oh yeah, I got this stuff figured out." Well, that didn't go so well. And then, of course, during the recession, 2008, 2010, I mean, that was a big challenge for me to make it through that season, because people weren't, doing training and development as much. Probably wasn't doing as much keynote speaking as I am now. That was a challenge. And then, I've had investments that I've made in the business and marketing. As I tell people, I just suck at marketing. I'm terrible. And of course, I know there's going to be several listeners going, "Hey, I could help with that, Jones." Just hold on. I have learned over the years that the number one way for me to market is to develop long-term relationships with folks and continue to add value to the things they're doing, whether that be individually or organizationally. So that's been a setback for me. I've spent some dollars in some very poor ways, only to realize it later that I could have, used that money more wisely. So I think those would be probably the biggest setbacks for me. I had a book, Getting to It, that is still available today in Kindle, and other formats, but it didn't go well. The message was just not quite as clear as it should be, and so that was not a it was a success in that Todd and I wrote it. It was not a success in the sense that the book found traction, found an audience, and took off. And I hate to really say that's a setback, because it's a learning experience. You know, I learned a lot from that. There's a lot of great content in the book that I still use today. But all of those things, I like what you said, that, you know, they start forming something for greater success. And you start taking the learning that you get from all of those things and say, okay, what does that mean for me now? What does that mean for me today? I was well prepared once the pandemic hit. I did have a dip, of course, because there weren't as much on-site events and activities going on. But I immediately knew, based on my history, that the best thing I could do during the pandemic was to really draw closer, develop stronger relationships with the people who'd been finding value in my content, and say, hey, how can I help? How can I serve you? What do you need in these days? And then creating that content, that online content, the webinars, and that kept me, you know, floating through those tough pandemic years. And then when I came out on the other side, wow, you know, you got all these people who now see even greater value in your work, and it really does make a difference.
Ah, yes, it does indeed. Yes, it does indeed. Yeah, not every project is going to be like, oh, yeah, baby, we're going to the moon, Mars, Uranus, and Pluto, baby. Yeah, that's right, D. We're going to freaking dominate Earth and leave it and come on back. It's like, oh, nope, you're staying right here, buddy. We're going to ground you.
Exactly. Yeah, and it does. You know, it does help to ground you. You know, every book project that I've had, you know, when the book comes out and there's some, you know, people buy the book. But then I find out, Dom, people might buy the book when it first comes out. They don't read it when it first comes out a lot of times.
Yep.
They just get it. And so then, you know, now, I mean, my newest book, Focused as a Bee, came out in January. And it's amazing how many people who ordered the book in January or something, or even purchased it from Amazon, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I read your book over the weekend. I'm like, it's April. But, you know, it takes time. And I think I know a lot of your listeners, and you talk about a lot about books and those things, is that it is a marathon and not a sprint. And so it is all about staying grounded, showing up every day, and continuing to provide, you know, content and value to others. And if the message is solid, then the book will find traction with an audience, and, you know, things will go well.
Oh, yeah, it'll go well indeed. It'll go well with the extra water, too. You'll love to see it. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Well, speaking of focused as a bee, the wonderful six buzzworthy strategies. I freaking love that freaking title. Like, it's so freaking great. I'm like, yeah, this is my kind of alley type of book right here. Like, my goodness, out of all the buzzworthy strategies, like, what was your favorite one to discover and share with the world?
Love that question, Dom. I don't think I have been asked that quite in that way. Yeah, that's a tough one. Because I do believe all six are valuable. I think the one for me, the one I love sharing, is the permission to recharge. The permission to recharge. When we think about focus, and people talk about being focused, and they forget that that takes energy. It takes mental, physical, emotional energy to really be present with your team, to be focused with them. It takes energy to be focused on a complex task. And you can only focus for so long before that energy starts being drained away, and how it's important to be proactive in renewing yourself so you can be present in the next moment. And the way I talk about that from the world of honeybees is that even though as hardworking as honeybees are, they take about 40 naps per day. Okay.
Wow. Now,
yes. Yes.
Oh, wow.
And so the, when one of your listeners is found curled up on their desk at work, when somebody walks in and say, well, hey, I was listening to the Going North podcast, and this is what they suggested I do, is take another nap. But the whole idea here is that bees know that the harder they're working, they have to take those moments to rest and to recharge, because they're going to be called upon in the next moment to go get more pollen, or to make more honeycomb, or to do one of the other, you know, 17 jobs that bees have at a hive. And they don't they won't be able to deliver their best work unless they take a break. Now, they do it intuitively. I think that's where we have to practice it intentionally and ask ourselves, okay, what do I need rest from? You know, if I can't focus right now, what do I need rest from? Maybe it's making decisions. Maybe it's problem solving. Maybe it's people rest. I mean, Dom, you and I love people, but don't tell me there aren't some times that you say, you know what? I just need a break from people for a little bit. And then when you come back and you're engaging with people, you are more focused. You are more energetic because you gave yourself that moment or those moments to recharge. So the permission to recharge is probably the one that is one of the most fun ones to share, because people don't think about the need to do that. They just think, okay, I'm going to focus and stay focused all day. No, you're not. You're going to focus for a little while, and then you're going to push the rest of the day. So it's important to build in those breaks.
You love to see it indeed. You love to see it indeed, man. Permission to recharge. You love to see it. It's right indeed. Probably one of the major things why, like, I guess a couple of years ago, folks were starting to get mad at the so-called grind culture, because it's like, it's like 24/7, 365. Yeah. Like, it's a grind. You got to work hard, buddy. No sleep until you're dead. It's like, dude, that mess gets old, man.
Absolutely. And you know, what's unfortunate about that, I mean, it's glorified, or it's really supported in our culture. And you really do have to be intentional about saying, is that what I want? Because a lot of people, if you stop them and say, is this really what you were hoping to, they're like, well, no, then okay, what's causing you to do it? What's driving you? Well, I just thought I was supposed to. Huh. Okay. What is it that you really want? Well, what I really want is to have a little time for myself and blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's amazing how if you get people to stop, which seems counterintuitive, you're like, no, I got so much to do. No, stop. And ask yourself some tough questions. Going back to my beloved honeybees, that one of the things I love about using them as a model is that every action a honeybee, individually or as a hive, every action that a honeybee takes is toward a specific outcome: to have a healthy hive. Every action that a bee takes is toward that outcome. I mean, they never do things that won't contribute to that outcome. Think about how, you know, we don't do that as well as human beings. Every action we take isn't aligned with the outcomes we want. We just make ourselves busy with activity, and we don't often stop to think, how is this contributing to who I want to become, or what do I want to achieve? And when we stop ourselves, then that's that moment where we can begin to really give ourselves permission to focus, say, okay, this is not what I want. I want something else. And I think we saw that when people started stopping and saying, yeah, this is not what I wanted. And then we saw quiet quitting, and we saw people stepping away because they're like, this is not what I wanted. Okay, what are the choices you can make that are in alignment with what's most important to you?
It's true indeed. It's so true indeed. Funny enough, it's like as you were talking, it's popped in my head. So my goodness, man. So has there been anything you had to unlearn to help yourself get even more focused on what you're doing and what you want to accomplish?
Oh, yeah. Part of, for me, as far as what I had to unlearn was just how to write again. I had not written in a few years after I wrote Always Growing, and it came out in 2017. And I thought it was going to be easy. Not that any of my books have been super easy to write, but I just thought, you know, okay, I'm going to sit down, get in the flow, get this thing hammered out, and off we go. And Dom, it was the hardest thing in the world for me to really figure out how to write this and what should be written. And so, strangely enough, I had to follow some of the principles that are in the book. I mean, because I've always believed you need to live your book before you write it. And so it was all about, okay, I've got to get clear with the outcomes I'm looking for, because then I can write more clearly. I've got to give myself permission. One of the permissions in the book is to be unavailable. So I had to give myself permission to be unavailable to some things in the business. I had to let my assistant take on some more responsibilities. I had to be unavailable to some of my own negative thoughts, my inner critic. And then I had to give myself permission to plan for how I was going to get this writing done. I had to consistently put it in my schedule, and I had to move myself into a state of flow, if you will. You know, you hear people talk a lot about that state of flow. It used to come more natural for me, Dom. Now, when I really want to focus, I move to a different location in my home office. I have a candle that I don't have to light it, but I do open it because it's got this great smell. I put on a certain kind of music, because all of those things start moving me into that mindset that, hey, this is when you focus on writing. And I found that as I consistently did that, even as goofy as it sounds, every time I'd sniff the candle, I'd go, oh, yeah, it's time to write. I mean, I feel like Pavlov and his dogs, you know? But that's one of the things that I had to, I guess, unlearn and relearn, was just how focus works for me now versus how it did, you know, 8 years ago. And how I have to work at it harder to get to that deep state of reflection and thought that helps create what I think is good writing.
Yeah, that's right indeed, that's right indeed. Hey, so right, man, sure, you had to get into that POP level two, your place of productivity level two. It's like, the old Jones is like, no, I'm a new Jones now. I got to do something different, babe. Let's get this candle, man. Get this scent going. Be like, get the senses going. Get the music in the ears. Like, let the creativity flow at a high level. Let's put some metaphorical weed on this productivity. Get it higher.
And you know what's so funny about that, Dom? I gotta share this with your listeners. I was reminded of the power of that whole thing with smell. I got into Indiana one evening. It'd been a long day, and I'm walking into my hotel. And as I walked into my hotel, I noticed I stood up a little straighter and I felt a little brighter. And I'm like, what's causing that? I mean, I'm going into a hotel for the night. It was the smell. You know, it was the scent. I mean, all of your listeners can relate to the fact they go into certain hotels. They go, wow, it smells good in here. You know, and we know what happens. We walk into a hotel and we go, smells musty in here. What got me more excited was the fact that it was just a certain smell. I mean, we are such creatures of our environment. And in the book, we talk about if you're going to focus, you've got to build that environment that helps you to focus. And that means turning off the notifications. It may mean moving to a different location where you can't see certain things that are distracting to you. But that it really does take work to bring yourself to that place of productivity, you know, that you talked about a moment ago. It doesn't just happen.
Hey, you're so right indeed. You're so right indeed. It doesn't just happen. Like, hey, you got to set yourself up for it sometimes. It's like, there we go.
Yeah.
It's right indeed. It's right indeed. It's like, yeah, metaphorical honeycomb principles. Actually, now to think about it, honeycomb principles, do you think that might be a follow-up book, make a whole series of it? Based on bees?
Well, you know, I would love to. Some people have really encouraged my daughter, who I co-wrote the book with, and a lot of it's built on some experiences that she has had with a friend. They've encouraged her to write a children's book. So that if we do a next book, it might be just me supporting her work with, you know, a children's version of this book focused as a bee. I'll be honest with you, Dom, my goal, I don't even want to think about writing another book for about a year, because I want to give all of my focus. There we go again. I want to give all my attention to helping get awareness out about Focus as a Bee, building out the other pieces related to the book. We're building an online assessment that's going to help people figure out, hey, where, you know, what, which of the six principles do I need to work on more? Is the permission to recharge? Is the permission to plan? Is the permission to change? And then give them the resources they need to improve in those areas so they can improve their focus. So with those things, I'm saying, you know, maybe over Christmas this coming year, I'll start thinking about what's next. But what's next right now is doing everything I can to make sure people are aware of the message, and if they have the tools they need to take the next step once they've read the book.
Yeah, sounds good indeed. Sounds like your daughter and her friend, her for all the friends, either grab some giant bee suits and start metaphorically stinging people. Be like, hey, buddy, let's make some buzzworthy lives here.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Yeah, I love the all the puns that come with, you know, writing a book about honeybees, because one of the things we like to tell people, are you ready to get buzzed? And they'll go, yeah, bring it on.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, that's right, dude. That's right. Are you busy as a bee? No, I'm focused as a bee.
Exactly. And see, that's one of those key. I had somebody call me the other day, Dom. It was so fun. They called me and said, hey, Jones, I'm focused as a bee. And I'm like, well, good for you. But the whole idea is, you know, we say, you know, people talk about bees. Oh, yeah, I'm as busy as a bee today. Well, you know, busy implies activity, but not necessarily accomplishment. Busy just means you've got things going on, but are they aligned with the outcomes you want? Bees are focused. That means that they have their time and their energy directly aligned with the outcomes that are most important to them. And that's the whole goal of the book, is to help people figure out how to align their time and energy toward what is most important. So it's not about being busy. It's about being focused, because there is a difference.
Yeah, you're so right indeed, because yeah, if folks were really as busy as a bee, they would do the 40 naps in a day.
Yeah, that's it. There's all kinds of principles they could apply to actually at the end of the day go, most of my time today was spent in a way that's aligned with what's most important to me, to what's within my control. Because I don't want your listeners to say, oh, well, Jones, that sounds great for you, but I'm not in control of everything. Exactly. Are you taking the opportunity to mold and shape the discretionary time you do have toward the outcomes that are most important to you? I was coaching someone the other day, and they were talking about no time for themselves. And I says, well, what would that look like? And they said, well, I'd like to have 30 minutes a day for myself. And I was like, okay, how much are you giving yourself now? And they said, well, probably none. I'm like, that's a big stretch to go from 0 to 30. I said, could we do 10 minutes? And they're like, well, that's not a lot. I'm like, you're not doing anything now. It's still an improvement. And then we talked about, when would that 10 minutes need to happen? Is it the beginning of the day where it's for the first 10 minutes, you know, get a hot beverage and you just kind of, or is this right when you come home from work? Dom, I've got one coaching client who, when they get home from work and they pull into their garage, the first 10 minutes, they stay in their car and just relax, kind of detox and kind of listen to some music. And it was so funny because he said the first day he did that, he forgot to tell his family. Well, his kids come out to the car and they're like, hey, dad, you okay? You okay? But you know, it's doing what you have. What can you do consistently? And if it's 10 minutes a day, give yourself 10 minutes a day. What is that time that you could use differently that you're using now that contributes more to, you know, what you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, that's right indeed. It's true. It's true indeed, because sometimes you have to do it and make the time wherever you can, because it's like, man.
Exactly.
Because at first, if you're not fully aware of where all your time goes, you're like, man, where the heck can I slice out some time here? It's like this giant pizza pie here and all the slices are already eaten. Like, how can I get a slice back here?
Exactly. Well said.
Yes, sir. Indeed. So my goodness, so since you've been on so many interviews promoting the magic work you're doing to help folks out on this wonderful planet we live on, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often when you're doing these interviews?
Wow, Dom, now I know why you're so successful. You ask the best questions. So is there a question people wish that I wish people that would ask me? You know, I've been asking me, I think you ask it today. And so that's why your listeners, if they go back and listen to this, the certain parts of the interview, the questions that you ask me about what's a failure that sets you up to improve. And I like that question because I don't do enough, even though I feel like I do some good self-reflection, I don't do enough of reflecting on my failures and what they've taught me. I do tend to focus more on the successes. And so I think that's a very helpful question to say, you know, what are some of the failures that have set you up for greater success? I think that's a great question. Another one that I heard in a conference a few weeks ago, a guy said, you know, when you're reflecting on where you've come from, ask yourself this question, where'd you get lucky? Ooh. Where'd you get lucky? I love that question. Because if you go back to, even with Who Moved My Cheese, what, you know, what was the likelihood of someone handing me a copy of Who Moved My Cheese in 2000 when I was feeling stagnant in my work? There were some things going on in my personal life that just weren't as I wanted them to be. What was the likelihood of somebody saying, hey, I went to a conference today and there was a guy there and they gave out these books and just handed me the book, had no idea, handed me the book, that I would read it and then call the company, oh, yeah, we've got this franchise program. After a year, they would say, oh, yeah, we're closing that down, but we want you to come on as a trainer. Yeah, I got lucky. You know, now luck is when preparation meets opportunity too. But I just think that's a great question. Where have you gotten lucky? Because if people stop and think about that, I think there's a lot of opportunity there to say, okay, how can we ensure our future success based on what we learned from getting lucky in that in our past? So I don't know if I answered your question or not or created more questions, but I think certainly the one about how have your failures helped shape you, I think that's a key one. And then the other one, if people wanted to ask, just so I could share hope with other people, is, yeah, where have you gotten lucky in your career? That's a fun one.
Yeah, sounds like I should add a jewelry store magic to the introduction because he's dropping the jewels today, baby. That's right, Dave. That's right. Hashtag Jones the Jeweler, baby. That's right, indeed. Y'all better be getting that tennis brace to wisdom today, baby. That's right, indeed. Because that's a powerful question. It's like, hey, where did I get lucky? Like, hey, that's a darn good question. It's like, hey, if you had some success asking where was that wonderful point, it's like, oh, here we go. I can point it back to that ball. It's like, all right, I read that book. I did something that no other person would do, would actually check out the resource in the back and call the company and then end up working for that company, then end up creating my own company later and helping to others to like succeed in life. Like, dude, that's amazing, man.
Oh yeah. I mean, and I mean, when I saw the power of the way that Who Moved My Cheese was written and then saw the impact it was having on people related to change, it inspired me to say, okay, what are some other stories or models that are relevant to me in my experiences? I mean, Juggling Elephants grew out of the question, what do I do about too much to do? Always Growing grew out of the whole idea of how can I be a more effective leader, both at work and in life? And so it's based on the concept of gardening, because my dad was an avid gardener. I love gardening. And then, of course, the newest one, Focused as a Bee, it connects to my experience with beekeeping and answering that question. How do I, you know, how to stay focused when I'm feeling so distracted by everything going on around me? But you're right. I had to have that moment to see the power of doing something that way and say, okay, how do I make that my own?
Yeah. You love to see it, dude. You love to see it, indeed. Well, fun question for you. Your fabulous book, Focused as a Bee, 6 Buzzworthy Strategies to Thrive in a Distracting World. If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
Wow. If that book were a food, it would be honey. Bah, you'd expected that one, didn't you? yeah, it would be honey because honey contains within it almost all of the things that we need for sustaining life. There are so many life-giving elements in honey. And so I would say that it would be honey because you also take honey in small doses. You don't consume it in large doses because we know what happens if you do that. But you know, it's sweet. You taste a little bit and then you come back a little bit later and you taste a little bit more. I hope that people will read the book in this way. Yeah, read it. Don't just then put it down. Come back and go, okay, yeah, I feel like I need to read that chapter again. Okay, good. Go read that chapter, apply some things, get you some sweet answers. Come back a few weeks later and say, oh, you know what? I think I'm going to pick up that book again. We still have people who pick up Juggling Elephants after, you know, almost 20 years because they're still finding value in the message. So I would hope that this book would be a jar of honey that they could come to again and again.
Oh, yeah, that's right, indeed. And the good news is you got an audio, too, so they definitely could come back to it again and again in more ways than one.
Right, and thrilled that in the audiobook, my daughter and I narrate it. So people who aren't from the southeastern part of the United States will get to hear some southern accents as they listen to the story. And, of course, they'll also get to hear at the very end of the audiobook the background of the story about Sydney and her friend Alicia, who tragically passed away, and that was the whole inspiration for working with bees and writing this book. Was one of the inspirations was to honor her memory. And so they get to hear Sydney tell that story in the audiobook version. It's in the print book, but it's very moving to hear Sydney tell it in her own words. So thanks for reminding your listeners about the audiobook.
Oh, of course, because like the joke when we say, the brainwashing can continue, because if they love hearing you talk, they get to keep it going.
Absolutely. You buy the book, you do the audible. You do the audible, then you buy the book. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. Well, we're coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive. And that is, if you don't wake up tomorrow and you are 25 again in 2025, what advice would you give to yourself?
Sure. Build stronger relationships. Build stronger relationships. That's what I would tell my younger self, is to build stronger relationships with people who are genuinely interested in helping you succeed. It's easy when we get busy in life to, again, I said earlier, to neglect those relationships, whether they be family or friends, business colleagues, mentors. But invest that time in building stronger relationships, not just a network, but build those strong relationships of people who will want to help you succeed. And so that's what I would tell my younger self.
Woohoo! That's right, indeed. So don't just go for the six-pack abs. Go for six-pack ab-like relationships with other folks who also want to help you out. You love to see. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right. That's right, indeed. We all been getting like a whole smorgasbord of content. And the beautiful thing is, this ain't even all that Jones knows. He's got a whole bunch more. So for those who need to keep up with you and all that you do and buy multiple copies of your whole metaphorical catalog of wonderful books, what's the best way for folks to do so?
Sure. Best way for people to see me, of course, my website, joneslaughlin.com. You can certainly reach out to me on LinkedIn. Those of you who are active on LinkedIn, I put out content on LinkedIn every day related to my books and messages. That's certainly a place that people can go. My books are available at my website. They're also available at Amazon. You just type in Jones Laughlin in the search, and it'll pull up all of my books, and you can purchase them there as well.
Woohoo! Well, there you have it, folks. That's right. Indeed, that's right. Indeed. We're going to put a link to all the Jones stuff in the show notes. That way you can all keep up with him, but keep up with your newer self that's going to be on the way. And then when your older self will show up in a few years in the back of your mind and be like, yep, I think I could kick their butt today. That's right, because I got some of that content in my brain. I chose to become focused as a bee. I built so many dang honeycombs, it's like I got more real estate.
Fantastic.
Oh, man. Any party word before we close up shop, my man?
Dom, thank you. I appreciate your energy. I could listen to you talk about quantum physics and get inspired. I appreciate the positive energy you bring. Your laughter is infectious. And thanks for what you do for folks like me, as we're all learning from each other. As I tell people, I don't have this stuff figured out. I'm just struggling right along with everyone else. And so, you know, we learn from each other in conversations like this, I think more than we realize. And so thank you for the work that you do to help us all grow.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in. And if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for three. And be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.